Florida State versus Georgia Tech in Dublin, Ireland. Michael, the 2024 football season is just days away, and Florida State's going to kick off the entire thing here on Saturday, and I can't wait to get into it. We got some reactions to some depth charts that just dropped that have a few surprises on there.
Okay.
And then, man, it is time. It is football season in full swing, and so I'm ready to talk about some Georgia Tech. I'm just really excited, man. It is. We have waited what feels like forever, even though it feels like it got here really fast, too. These week zero games just kind of sneak up on you.
Yeah.
But, man, I'm so excited for football season to be back. Super pumped up to talk about this game. And so before we jump in, my friend, how are you? And are you excited to talk about some 2024 football?
Oh, yeah, Jesse, I'm good. I'm excited. You know, like you remember the old days in WWF with Hulk Hogan come out and he'd rip his shirt, be like, ah! That's what it's been like. Like now that we're in game week, I just want to like go, yeah, let's go. Right. I'm just so thrilled that it's finally game week. It's finally game week. FSU versus Georgia Tech. Man, I've been just jonesing for college football. Like I'll watch anything. You know what I mean? And
yeah.
So it's great that we're finally in game week. We can talk about the actual game before us and get all of our thoughts out there for you guys. And man, let's go. Let's get into it.
Yeah, I'm excited. This is about the time of the week where I'll put the war chant on YouTube, repeat, and just listen to it about 500 times my car, in some headphones, and just to get pumped up, man, because I can't wait. So
that's right.
First off, I think before we get into that Georgia Tech game, I think it would be best to set the stage with the depth chart that just came out the other day. And, you know, frankly, there were a couple of surprises on there. So
that's
this
right.
will help us set the stage for the 2024 season. And you know, I think overall, I feel really good about the depth chart. There was just a few kind of curveballs coming out that we didn't see. So I'm going to throw it up on the screen for those of you watching on YouTube as we kind of go through this thing here. So we'll start with offense. Quarterback is, of course, as expected, DJ is your starter, Brock Glenn at number two. And then at running back, again, no surprises here either. Roydell Williams as well as Lawrence Toilafilly getting the start there. I will mention that Cam Davis is in the lineup as an or behind Keziah Holmes and Roydell Williams. So you know, Mike Norvell did talk about how he has earned his way through a really dynamite fall camp to be a producer for this team this year. So, I mean, again, I just can't wait. You know, we talked about the running backs in the offensive preview, and I just imagine it's, you know, it's the fourth quarter and you're gassed, and here comes Cam Davis.
Exactly.
And he is just going to run you over. So I cannot wait to see him play as well. But then you go out to the wide receiver position, and a couple of things you expect here. Of course, Malik Benson is your wide receiver one. You have Ja'Kai Douglas in the slot. Those are pretty much penciled in starters before the season. And then you get your first curveball at the other wide receiver spot opposite of Malik Benson. And that's Jaylen Brown, redshirt freshman, LSU transfer. Only played 12 snaps last year. Didn't even record any stats. But I think, you know, when you look at he came in as a four-star transfer with that little experience, was a top 100 recruit coming out of high school. It just talks about the talent that this guy has. Now, I think there are two ways to look at this, right? You could also look at this as it's a little alarming that you have a redshirt freshman come in as a transfer and beat out a lot of veteran guys, beat out Hakeem Williams. You're kind of wondering what's going on with that group. You know, I do think you're going to see a lot of those guys. I will say that. We know that, but you know, before we get too far into this depth chart, we know Mike Norvell doesn't follow this to a T.
Right.
They do play a lot of guys. This may be like the starting first play, but you could see a lot of people rotate in the first quarter. They do rotate a lot. So we do expect to see a lot of these different guys that are listed on this depth chart get a chance to play. But man, Jaylen Brown, I think it, as much as it says about the other guys, it really talks about what he has done to be able to come in and kind of snatch that starting spot from a bunch of veterans. And, you know, when I look at this receiving core, it gets me excited because, I mean, I actually didn't expect him to be a contributor till 2025. I really didn't. But he's been consistent throughout camp from what we've heard. Hasn't made a lot of noise. That's why I think it was a little bit of a surprise. But when you look at this receiving core, I mean, Malik Benson, burner.
Right.
Ja'Kai Douglas, burner. Jaylen Brown, burner. And so you have speed. And we've talked about that this whole offseason about how the speed was going to be dangerous at wide receiver. And, you know, Malik Benson is a guy that was like a 10-4, 10-6, 100 guy coming out of high school. The same with Jaylen Brown. And then we know Ja'Kai has speed too. So we talked about in the offensive preview where Mike Norvell's offenses are best when you have explosive plays. And with this level of speed at receiver as well, you know, to go along with DJU's big arm, man, I think that's a recipe for success. I do like with the guys that you have behind them, though, again, with Darion, with Kentron, with Deuce, they're going to get in the rotation. And you know, when you bring those guys in, you have 6'3", 6'4", 6'3", 6'4", coming in. So you have size too. You have size that you can bring off the bench, like we saw last year with this receiving corps. But, man, there's some burners at receiver. But I didn't quite see that Jaylen Brown move coming.
Oh, no, absolutely. Listen, Mike Norvell has more burner speed and wide receiver in the starting lineup than a criminal has on a burner phone. Like, right. My goodness. Like, I mean, it's just up and down that three wide receiver lineup there. Like, you got burner. And then behind them, you got burner, right?
Yeah.
You got length, you got size, you got everything. And as you said, you know, Mike Norvell, they're going to rotate wide receivers depending on formation, depending on scheme, depending on down and distance of what they need. But what this tells me, Jesse, is more of like this is an award for the work that they put in, you know, from spring to fall camp. And this is kind of like, hey, these are the players that have stepped up. These are the players that are going to see that first play. But then after that, I mean, I would imagine you're going to see all nine of these guys on the field at some point in time in the first quarter throughout the whole game as well. But yes, that Jaylen Brown being at the starting lineup there caught me off guard just a little bit because, like you said, it was kind of a quiet preseason camp. You didn't hear a lot of him, but you did hear about consistency with him. And so I think this is, again, an award that, you know, Mike is that the offensive staff are saying, hey, this guy's been consistent. We're going to give him a chance. And remember, Mike Norvell has always said from the very beginning that this offense is built for playmakers. If you're going to show the consistency of making the plays, you're going to be the starter. His job is to get people that can make the plays. Your job is to win the opportunity to make those plays. And so that's what this all proves to me.
Yeah, and I think that's a good thing because, you know, we always talked about with the young guys, can they get on the field? Will they get on the field? And it's always been like, look, you got to put the best guy on the field. And that's it doesn't matter, you know, what initials are by their name, red shirt, senior, sophomore, junior, freshman, whatever it is, the best guy's got to be on the field.
That's right.
And this shows that they're not scared to do that. And something that they talked about with fall camp was, you know, this is a talented receiving corps. They're just looking for consistency.
That's right.
And so, you know, if this is a guy that comes in and has shown consistency, then he deserves to be on the field. But continuing down the depth chart on offense, tight end Kyle Morlock, no surprise there. Brian Courtney, Jackson West listed behind him. I know people talked about, you know, oh gosh, there's no Landon Thomas, there's no Amari Williams listed. You know, what are we doing? Where do these guys go? And look, first off, I will say that we know Florida State does not release injury news.
That's right.
There are guys that may be banged up from camp, dealing with little nagging injuries, you know. They could still play. I mean, you can only put so many guys on the depth.
That's right.
There's only so many spaces. You can't just list the whole. There's a roster and a depth chart. There's two different things. Yeah. It doesn't mean that these guys can't play. I just think right now I'm thinking, and this will show more on the defense, and we'll talk about that there. But I do think they're kind of leaning a little experience heavy right now in that first game against Georgia Tech because, again, it is an ACC game in the 12-team playoff era. There is a heightened sense of winning these ACC games because that is how you get that automatic qualifier bid. So I think they did kind of look towards the experience side of things there as well. Now, when you look down at the offensive line, I think there was a little – not I won't call it a surprise, but there was a little one that – you know, that kind of caught my eye here. And it's one that I kind of actually gave a hint on in our offensive preview. And that's Keiondre Jones starting over TJ Ferguson, but there is an or there. So Darius Washington is your left tackle. No surprise there. We're excited to see Darius actually get to kind of hone in on a position. I will say it is encouraging to see Lucas Simmons at that back left tackle. You know, this is a guy that probably was one of your highest ceiling, best tackle body recruits coming in a long time. And it's nice to see him be getting himself in that role that early. You have Richie Leonard at left guard, Maury Smith at center. And then, like I talked about, Keiondre Jones at right guard. I liked him there because the identity of this offense feels like it's going to be the run game.
Yeah.
And we've seen him have a history of being a masher up front as a guard. The pass blocking leaves a little bit to be desired, but again, I mean, the guy is a redshirt senior, 337 pounds. He's got good run blocking grades, and so I think that's why he got that nod there. I think you will see TJ Ferguson. Then you got Byers or Robert Scott out there at right tackle, and I will say the one thing that stands out to me on this offensive line is that, you know, you remember years past where it'd be like, Darius Washington is your starting tackle, your backup guard, your third string center. Like, he was a little bit of everybody crossed that's over everywhere. This year, you don't see any of that listed. Everybody is just one guy at their position with backups in place. And so I do think that, you know, that should help with continuity throughout the season. Let guys play their positions that they've been working at. You know, a couple of ors on this depth chart. There's 13 ors overall. So there's a lot of ors, a lot of guys that are going to be rotating in. I think the two ors on the starting offensive line are good, because that tells you that they have seven guys that they feel like could be starters right now. So that means you have your starting five, you have seven guys you feel good about, and then you have a lot of backups. You know, Andre Otto is a guy that worked his way into the rotation as a young guy. So a lot of encouraging stuff from this offensive line. I think it shows the depth that you have here and the higher talent floor. You know, when you have a guy like TJ Ferguson that comes in from Alabama and you know, isn't even a starter right now. He's an or, but he isn't even a starter. You know, that tells you where this offensive line has come.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, gosh, we've said this so many times on a bunch of shows. We used to pray for days like these.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
Like, my goodness, we actually have a functioning offensive line that we're not like praying to the Lord Jesus that like they could actually like, you know, show up on game day and make a pass block or a run block. Like, we're actually going into the season confident and hopefully the run blocking getting much better than it was last season, a return to that 2022 form, and then the pass blocking continue to get better, continue to be good. I along with you, as you pointed out, you know, I mean, KJ, you know, Keandre Jones, like, you know, last year was an incredible run blocker, you know, left the passing blocking to be a little bit more desired. So you hope that by the staff putting this or and having his name first, that it's signifying that actually he has just maybe a step above TJ Ferguson, but that TJ Ferguson is going to be right in there. He's going to be used, going to be leveraging that. And again, I think this first game is really about them just trying to put them in game situations to see who steps up, who's better in this side or this fit as well too. The thing I'll say to you, Jesse, the one that's more surprising to me is the fact to see Robert Scott as an or behind Jeremiah Byers. Now, you know Jeremiah Byers last year. You know what he did. You know what he brings to the table, and he's going to get even better. But to see Robert Scott, who had been injury-prone all last season, barely available, barely played, but, you know, was at the beginning of his career one of the core anchors of this team, to see him be able to come back and to be a part of this rotation, I mean, that gives me even more confidence going into the season, going into this game with Georgia Tech, that, like, man, one of the best offensive linemen Mike Norvell had here before Darius Washington is now back in the fold. So let's see what he can do.
Yeah, I think, again, that's just that talented, skilled depth that you're building, and that's why Norvell feels like he has the best and deepest line that he's had at FSU. And, again, man, I mean, it is nice to have Robert Scott back.
Yeah.
The question will be, of course, can he stay healthy? But, you know, we talked about this in the offensive preview. If you can have that guy as a serviceable backup that's ready to go, man, I mean, that makes you feel really good about where you're at. And, you know, just, again, rotating and keeping guys fresh, too, that's going to be a big benefit throughout the course of the season. Now, flipping over to the defensive side, looking at the defensive line, you start with Patrick Payton at your one defensive end spot. No surprise there. Josh Farmer, Darryl Jackson in the middle, looking good there. At the other defensive end spot, Marvin Jones Jr. does get the nod. And, you know, I will say, as on our defensive preview, I said I thought it was going to be Sione.
Yeah.
You know, that's a guy that comes in with over 1,000 snaps of experience, an all Pac-12 performer last year. I thought maybe they would give him the edge in the start because Marvin Jones has had a little bit of a quiet camp. But again, that's why I hate having to rely on other people's opinions. Hopefully we'll have access someday so we don't have to do that anymore. I will say this, though. I think I get two main reads out of this. One, again, just like we talked about with the offensive line, when you have a guy that comes in with over 1,000 snaps and was an all Pac-12 performer, and now he's a rotational player, again, man, that speaks to the depth that they have in the trenches this year. I also think when you talk about Marvin Jones Jr., daggone right, I'm happy to be wrong about that. You know what I mean? Because that tells me that Marvin Jones Jr. has fulfilled what they needed to see to be a starter opposite of Patrick Payton. And that's what we wanted. This is a guy that has an NFL body type, has that really high ceiling, former five-star coming in from Georgia. This is the guy that you wanted to be your starter.
That's right.
So I think I'm excited to see the fact that he has done what he has to do to get on the field in that starting role opposite of Patrick Payton.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm excited that Marvin Jones Jr. has won the starting position. Look, you went out and you got him, and you probably paid a significant NIL price tag to bring him in. And you expected that when he came in with that development from Georgia, that he would be like already just kind of, you know, he would be the
Jermaine Johnson 2.0.
Jermaine Johnson 2.0. He'd be the Jared Verse 2.0, where he was just like boom, 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 boom. Well, the fact is that he had a quiet spring, he had a quiet preseason camp, and you just started wondering, like, well, is something wrong? Is he, you know, we don't want to speculate on injury, but is he not living up to his potential? And then boom, the depth chart comes out and you're like, oh, okay. The coaches are confident enough to say, hey, this guy is going to at least get that first snap on defense if we run this scheme, this call, whatever it is. And so you're confident in the fact that, okay, the coaches see this. John Perpucci see this, to put him in that starting lineup, right? And so I'm excited that he's in there. We're glad to be wrong about this.
Right, exactly. Because like I said, I think this is the guy that you wanted there. Right. And you were kind of worried when he was, when, you know, you weren't sure if he was going to be there. So I think that's a good feeling to have. And again, I mean, you have so many guys that you can bring in there. I will say Durajaye is listed as an or at defensive tackle, not at defensive end. So, I mean, you just have so much depth here that you get a chance to move guys around, which is good from the defensive end spot. Now, going back to linebackers here, no real surprises there. Cam Riley gets the nod at starter opposite of DJ Lundy, but there is an or with Blake Nicholson. And to me, that's encouraging as well, because this is a guy that has a high ceiling, comes in as a four-star linebacker that you've really kind of been waiting to see him put it all together. You know, you really wanted to see Blake Nicholson be able to be that, you know, if they go to a 4-3, that third guy, to be someone who can rotate in. And so I'm encouraged to see him listed as an or as well. But again, like we said, there's really no surprise there with DJ Lundy. Omar Graham is listed behind him. So there was no Sean Murphy on the depth chart. I know some people made some stuff of that. I don't know if there's an injury situation or not. Right. Of course, if you watch the post-spring episode, this wasn't exactly a surprise for us. That's no knock on him. It's just wasn't a big performance. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, he's around. He's probably going to play. Now, when you go back to the secondary, you have your staples there. You have Fentrell Cypress at one corner. You have Azaria Thomas at another corner. No surprise there. We expected those guys to be starting coming into the season. Also, Shaheem Brown at the other safety spot. Lock that down. No surprise there. There was a bit of a surprise, though, Michael. We did get a bit of a surprise. You know, even talking about getting it right and wrong, I don't even think any beat writers got this right, and they get to watch practice every day. And that is Kevin Knowles moving positions back to corner to fill that nickel role that was vacated by Jerrion Jones. And I think this makes sense, because when you look at him going back to safety last year, it was because, you know, Jamie Robinson moved on. Akeem Dent was banged up throughout camp. You knew you needed to add some depth back there. You didn't have a whole lot. And so then now you have Devontae Brown, you have Conrad Hussey, you have all these guys, Edwin Joseph, that can play. And now you can, or KJ Kirkland, excuse me, now you can move him back to his natural position.
Right.
Because, you know, when Greedy Vance transferred out, you had kind of lost your depth there at that nickel slot, which is what kind of who we thought was going to be the starter. And then you get, of course, you bring in Earl Little Jr., who comes in, who does get an or, so he is going to play a lot too. But I will say with Kevin Knowles, I think there's a couple things to think about here. One, there has been a lot of rumor that he played with injury last year, especially a shoulder injury. And okay, Kevin, I'm sorry I gave it to you about tackling. I get it. I'm sorry. But it's nice to see him. He's back in his natural position. He's healthy, and he's had a good fall camp. So I feel like that's a good spot there to move him back to give you some depth at that nickel position. I think he will play better there. And again, I think this speaks to them going with that experience early in the game. I mean, Earl Little Jr. is a guy that we feel great about. He didn't play a whole lot at Alabama, but a lot of people felt like he should have been the starter there. But again, you're coming out against a offense that returns a lot of production. So again, I think you're going with that start or that experience there to start with. And the same thing goes for the safety spot with Devontae Brown getting the start over Conrad Hussey. You know, Conrad Hussey's my guy. I probably still would have put in there. But again, you talk about a guy that has 2,000 snaps of experience in Devontae Brown and actually played well at UCF. Right. A lot of people there was a lot of people that were really negative about that take
coming over
from Miami. And I will remind you, first off, it's Miami. Okay.
It's Miami.
They ruin a lot of players. You know, look at the way both of their safeties, the Williams kid and Cam Kitchens. The way they regressed last year. So I don't hold that year against him. He had a really good 3 years at UCF. I had a breakout season in 2021. So you have the experience there, but you also have Conrad Hussey who's going to play. So, man, two surprises on the back end there. But again, I am 0% worried about the secondary, but give me some thoughts about these surprises that you saw.
Yeah, I love the fact that Kevin Knowles has shown the coaches that, hey, the Kevin Knowles from freshman year is back, right? When he jumped on the scene, you're like, holy cow, this kid is incredible. And then, of course, like, you know, like last year he 2 years ago, and then last year he played, you know, speculation is that he had injuries and stuff. And it's hard to play at your full capacity if the speculations are true and he was injured, and to try to make tackles. And yet he couldn't even like rest because they had so little depth back there last year that he had to play. And when he was in there, he tried his best. Now, if it was injury, we can't always blame on injury. Sometimes he took a poor angle. Sometimes he was in the wrong spot. But for the most part, it was all about tackling. That was the biggest gripe against him last year. So for him to have a redemption tour this year and make up for that, and the coaches are like, no, we're putting him right back at his natural position, that shows a lot. That shows that he's been really making that stride and getting better. And probably if the injury speculations are true, that he's actually returning to form again. So I'm thrilled about that. I think Devontae Brown or Conrad Hussey, like we said in the defensive preview, you could go either or. So I think it's going to be situational based on who gets, you know, who's in at what time, but you're going to see both of them. But yeah, again, at the end of the day, like you said, I have no concerns about this secondary. I think it's going to be one of the best secondaries in the country. And I think whoever's in there at that other safety position is going to make plays where they have to. And because they're going to be put hopefully in the right spot that they can be leveraged in the best possible way.
For sure. And I know you called for Kevin Knowles to have a breakout season.
I did.
You probably didn't think it was going to be a nickel. So
not a nickel.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. But I do cut him some slack with being injured. You know, I'm past that midpoint in my 30s now. My back hurts if I sleep wrong, let alone go play Division I football. They'd have to carry me out in an ambulance. Let me share a couple of quick thoughts on this depth chart before we get into Georgia Tech that I think are really interesting. So one of the knocks on Florida State coming into 2024 was, they're going to take a step back because they lost a lot of their top producers. They don't have all that experience that they brought back last year. You know, you talk about Virginia Tech is the number one team in the country in returning production. Florida State's way on down that list, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I asked Mike Norvell about that at ACC Media Days, and he told me, said, look, just because you lose a lot of your top producers doesn't mean you don't have a lot of guys that played. And he talked about DJ Lundy being a guy that played since he was a true freshman. And, you know, he's not kidding, man. When you look at this roster top to bottom, looking at just the guys that are listed at starters right now, not the ors or the two deep, but off of this 2024 depth chart for game one, 21 out of 22 starters are upperclassmen. There are a lot of seniors listed on this depth chart. There's only one underclassman, that's Jaylen Brown, getting a start. Offense has almost 17,000 snaps of combined experience. Defense is just over 12,000 snaps of experience. As far as players that have played in at least 500 snaps, you have 20 of them. Players that have played with 1,000 or at least 1,000 snaps, you have 12. And I mean, even then, you look at a guy like Malik Benson as one of your lower snap count guys at 350, but he played 2 years at JUCO as well. You look at Daryl Jackson, a guy who has, I think it was around 680 snaps, but he also practiced a full year at FSU. He just couldn't play on Saturdays. So, I mean, he's been getting the experience as well. This offensive line has over 11,000 combined snaps of experience. Wow. Every single guy, every single starter has over 1,000 snaps, and four or five have over 2,000 snaps. We just talked about the secondary and the experience back there. Those guys have over 7,000 combined snaps of experience, with every starter having over 1,000 snaps of experience, except for AZ, who has 820, and we feel like he's the best of the group. Right. So a lot of these snaps, 53.4%, came at FSU. So it's not like all the transfers brought in the experience. There's a lot of experience in Adam Fuller's defense and Mike Norvell's offense. You have guys on this roster that have played in the ACC championship, the SEC championship. You have guys that have been in big game situations. So, man, there's – for everything people say about Florida State not bringing stuff back, man, there's a lot of experience on this team.
Man, and that's the thing about this. That's what gives the coaches so much confidence. Honestly, that's what gives me confidence, is that while you may not have a lot of experience as far as in this system or playing for Mike Norvell, you have a lot of experience overall. You have a lot of experience across, up and down the depth chart. I mean, with the 16,000 experience over snaps in the offense and about 12,000 snaps in the defense. I mean, you're not putting out a bunch of, you know, players who've never played before in college, at the college football level. You're putting out players who've had significant snaps, who've been in significant situations and scenarios and things like that. And so all it is about now is just getting them to do it within FSU system, within FSU scheme. But man, with that alone gives me even more confidence going into the game. And that makes sense because the team you're going to be facing brings back a boatload of experience as well. So you're basically putting up experienced talent versus experience. And at the end of the day, we all know experienced talent will most likely win over experience.
Yeah, I agree. And even if they didn't get it here, I mean, again, that's still game experience that you cannot replicate. And on the offense, you have 5 out of 11 players that are playing for FSU for the first time. On defense, that number's only 3. So a lot of these guys have played in these systems. So before we jump into Georgia Tech, let me bring you a quick word from today's sponsor, and that is Alumni Hall FSU. Guys, we are less than 2 weeks away from being back in Dope Campbell Stadium. You know, not everybody got to make the trip to Ireland. I'm a little jealous of those that did, of course. But you're going to want to get some new FSU gear in your hands before that first game in Dope Campbell Stadium. And you can get it at a great price with code SPEAR. Alumni Hall has everything you need, from clothes, tailgate supplies, all that good stuff, game day necessities that you're going to need. And you can get it, like I said, at a good price with code SPEAR to get 10% off. 1415 Timber Lane Road in Tallahassee, or online at alumnihall.com. We appreciate you guys for supporting those that support us. So, Michael, let's get into Georgia Tech. This is game one of the 2024 season. It's very important, like we talked about with that 12-team playoff. There is a heightened sense of winning these ACC games. You know, I even talked about in our episode of the 5 most important games of the season, I said Georgia Tech was number one. That's and right. The reason I think that is because if you were to lose this game, one, it flips your expectations upside down for the whole season. Two, it puts you behind the eight ball in the ACC race. That's because right. Now you're down a conference win, and I don't expect Georgia Tech to be in contender, so that wouldn't be good. And then, you know, I think you're going to find out a lot. This is going to be a gut check, because Georgia Tech is not a bad team. They might have a bad defense, but they're not a bad team.
Right.
And so I think this game is going to be really important. So what we're going to do is we're going to start out with some overall looks at this game. Then we're going to get into drill down into some offense and defense. So looking here first at some game facts, the kickoff is at noon Eastern time. You know, a lot of people were kind of like, a noon game, what? And then but I think that has a lot to do, obviously, with the time change. I believe it's a 5 p.m. kick in Dublin there. Now, this game is sold out, and they do expect a lot of international travelers. I think they said something like 27,000 international travelers. So I think there's going to be a big group of FSU fans there. You know, like I said, I'm only mildly jealous. when you look at the odds for this game, Florida State is the favorite by 11.5 points. That number did come down from 13.5. So Georgia Tech did close the gap a little bit. And honestly, man, I think for game one, I think that's actually a pretty fair spread there. Over under at 55.5 points. I probably would have put that a little bit higher. I think you're going to have even first game here. I think you are going to have some offense in this one. ESPN's matchup predictor has FSU with a 79.7% chance to win. That feels pretty heavily towards the Noles. When you look at the series record here, Florida State does hold the all-time series lead at 15-11-1. Last meeting, Florida State thumped them 41-16 in 2022 inside Dope Campbell Stadium. We're going to be about 4,000 miles from Dope Campbell Stadium in this one, Michael. So not going to be a whole lot of home field advantage as well. But do keep in mind, Georgia Tech has, you know, they've done some things against Florida State in the past. They spoiled Mike Norvell's coming out party. They, you know, they had the crazy field goal game. So it's not a team that, you know, they're familiar with how to pull an upset here. And, you know, again, like I've talked about before, man, not to scare everybody, but, you know, Brent Key took over after they, you know, they switched away from the triple option. It took them a long time to recover. Jeff Collins came in, could never win more than 3 games. Brent Key comes in and goes, I think, 4-4 his first year.
Yes.
And
so as the interim.
Right. So he won more games as an interim coach in a half a season than Collins did the first 3 years. But then you see him get that next season and they rebound and make a bowl. But man, he's 4-0 versus ranked ACC teams.
That's right.
That's a little bit of a scary stat, because guess what? We're a ranked ACC team. So that makes me a little bit nervous. Now, he's not undefeated against ranked teams altogether. Right. But he is undefeated against ranked ACC teams. So we're going to have to be on the lookout there. Now, doing a quick 2023 rewind, because we don't have any 2024 to go off of yet. So we kind of have to look back and draw conclusions from a little bit of last year and what's changed. So you look at Florida State, as we know, was 13-1 compared to 7-6 for Georgia Tech, 5-3 in the ACC. Their scoring offense was at 31.1 points per game, which ranked 43rd. So it's a pretty good offense, kind of middle of the road, but, you know, maybe upper third of the Division I. Scoring defense, that was near the bottom, 29.5, 97th in the country. Again, a struggle year for them on defense. Turnover margin, +4, 40th in the country. And explosive plays was at 62. That's over 20 yards, which was 51st. So, you know, again, man, this is a pretty good offense-heavy-led team. And so we're going to get into those strengths and weaknesses in just a minute. But looking at the 2024 outlook here, 5.5 projected wins for Georgia Tech, not a whole lot of expectations coming in this year. I actually think the team is better than the expectations. I think that has a lot to do with a hard schedule. Florida State, of course, is at 9.5 projected wins. Your Phil Steele experience rank here is at 24th. Florida State's all the way down to 73rd. So
yeah,
they got a lot more experience coming in than us. Now, returning production, they are at 66%, 83% on offense, 49% on defense. Florida State is at 58%, 56 on offense, 60 on defense. So the thing with Georgia Tech, man, that makes them dangerous is they return the majority of their strength, and that's the offense at 83%. Probably doesn't help that you only return half of a bad defense, or maybe it does help. Who knows?
Maybe.
right. Combined O-line. You don't want them guys back. Combined O-line starts. They do have 128, 13th in the country. One of the most experienced offensive lines as well. But not quite like Florida State, 190 combined starts, third in the country. S&P plus preseason rank, Florida State is at 12th, and Georgia Tech is at 58. So let's get into some offense and defense here. I will say that last year, because again, 247, they're dragging their feet, man. I need y'all to get on these talent composite rankings. So we have to look back at last year. Rosters, of course, changed, but last year they were 36th in the country and most talented. Florida State was at 20th. Now, we know Florida State has a higher blue chip ratio this year than they did last year, so they technically have a more talented team. But, you know, 36 isn't bad. They're not terribly far down the way there. So, man, give me some thoughts on the overall numbers we just talked about, and then we'll jump into the offense and defense.
Yeah, I mean, Georgia Tech, like you said, it's been one of those tricky teams for Florida State. I mean, 15-11 record, you know, they're one of the few ACC teams where the record isn't so far, you know, FSU lean. Georgia Tech has always given, you know, Florida State some trouble. Obviously, when Paul Johnson was there and, you know, they ran the triple options offense, and it was just a frustrating time. I always hated playing Georgia Tech. Obviously, the kick six game, you know, where they block the kick and then run it back and ruin an undefeated season there with Everett Golson at quarterback for that season. And then, of course, you know, spoiling Mike Norvell's, you know, opener with
Jeff Sims.
Disregarded Jeff Sims, right? Yep. And then of course, we get a little bit of revenge 2 years ago where they just put a whooping on them. But this is a completely different team from that team from 2022. And Brent Key has come in, and he has instilled kind of, you know, he's continued to instill who he is and what that team will be about. And they saw improvement. I mean, they fired Jeff Collins, you know, was it 4 games into the season? And then they end up going 4-4 when they probably weren't going to win any more games than that. And then last year they make a bowl game. I think they went 7-6, if I believe correctly. Yep. They had wins over Miami because Miami doesn't know how to take a knee. They beat North Carolina because they don't know how to play defense. And so, yeah, I mean, they are showing remarkable improvement. They had Georgia. I mean, they played Georgia really well last year. Yeah. I mean, the final score was 31-23, but they were in that game for most of that game. And so you cannot take this team lightly. You know, they come in with the 24th level of Phil Steele experience. So, you know, they're bringing back production from last year. They've got players who've been in situations, and they're only going to, you would assume, get better under Brent Key. So, yeah, you got to take this game very seriously. You got to walk in there. And if you have a chance to end the game, whatever end it now, because they are not going to quit. That was one thing that we'll talk about this later in the film, but they do not quit. They keep coming at you and coming at you no matter what the score is. They play like it's 0-0 all the way until the final whistle. So Florida State's going to have to be able to do the same thing with them.
Yeah, and really, when you look at Brent Key, I mean, he's a Georgia Tech alum, a former offensive lineman, so like he does kind of bring that aura about him. He was, you know, he's not shy about touting his quarterback and Georgia Tech at ACC Media Days either. So, you know, I think that's how you should be as a coach, and you're instilling that. But yeah, man, when you talk about that experience, I think that's big in game one. You know, we talk about that all the time with just that continuity coming into game one when maybe you have some new pieces. So looking at the Georgia Tech offense, let's start there because that's their strength. And, you know, when you talked about that Georgia game, that was a big one because yes, they did lose the game. And yes, I have to say that that was a Brock Bowerless Georgia, but Brock Bowers didn't play defense. And when you look at what that offense did against Georgia's defense, they were tied, I think, for the second most yards per play against that defense on the entire season. So they were doing some stuff. And, you know, we talked about it before the show. We went back and watched that film, and early in that game, they were eating Georgia up. They had a couple of mistakes with penalties and a couple turnovers that really changed the direction of that game. And so when you talk about this Georgia Tech offense, again, like we said, averaged just north of 31 points per game last season. In yards per play metric, it was over at 6.34 yards per play, which was 27th in the country. Passing offense, 221 yards per game, 68th. Only threw the ball around 29 times a game. They are a run-heavy team. 204 rush yards per game, 13th in the country. Got a good rushing offense, averaged over 5 yards a carry. Their yards per carry was actually 8th in the country. So, man, they are going to run the ball at you. That is for sure. A lot of that is Haynes King. They averaged 38 attempts per game on the ground. So, again, 38 to 29 run to pass there. They are a run-first team. Like we talked about, explosive plays, 62 of them, 51st in the country. They had – actually, it's funny. When you look at the 10-plus yards plays as far as explosive, Georgia Tech had 198. Florida State had 198. So it was dead even there. But, you know, when you look at the long rushing plays, it was tied for 14th in the country. Long passing plays was 69th in the country. So, again, like we talked about, man, this is a very run-first team. A lot of that, again, like we talked about, is with Haynes King's dual threat ability. And he's a legit runner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he can't hurt you with his legs. I know we're going to get into that in a minute. Third down offense, 43%, 39th in the country. Red zone offense is 86%, 58th in the country. 26% field goal. So they did settle for a lot of field goals last year. Now turnovers lost last year. They did have a little bit of a turnover problem. 96 in the country with 21 turnovers. Phil Steele does project their offense to get a little bit better at 32.4 points per game. So he does expect them to take a little bit of step. So we're going to get into some personnel here. We're going to talk about some of the stuff that we saw on film. So let's start obviously with the most important player, the heart of their offense. And that is Haynes King. You know, this is a Jimbo recruit. Shout out Jimbo. Started his career at Texas A&M, comes in to Georgia Tech, started all 13 games last year. By all means, had a pretty good season here. 226 of 367, 61.6% completion percentage, 2,842 yards, 7.7 yards per attempt, 27 touchdowns through the air, but 16 interceptions. So that's going to be somewhere that hopefully we can take advantage of. QBR was 72.3, 28th in the country. And when you look at him as well as a passer, he did start out pretty good. But then late in the season, he really tailed off. He had a lot of kind of games where it was under 200 yards. So they're going to be looking for more consistency out of him this year, as well as cutting down on those turnovers. Now, he was 67th in PFF pass grade. He had a 10.8% pressure to sack ratio, which was not bad. Took 14 sacks. That was a good offensive line last year.
Yeah.
And then just a couple of other things that I had. So when you look at his – we'll get into scheme in just a minute. But again, man, when you look at the rush yards too, this is probably almost his strength. I mean, again, he's not a bad passer by any means. But when you look at that rushing stats, 120 carries, 737 yards, 6.14 yards per attempt, 10 touchdowns, 4 fumbles. And here's another one, man. This goes to show where he can hurt you. On runs of 10 plus, you know, we talked about this in our offensive preview where DJ had like 24 and Trey Benson had like 23. So we're like, yeah, DJ, you can hurt you in that run game. He had 27 on 120 carries, which was the sixth most in the country. Now, he does do a lot of design runs, and we'll get into some of that in a second. But design runs do count for 66.1% of his yardage. Scrambles are only 33.9. He is not scared to call his own number. That
no,
is for sure. So, man, give me some thoughts on Haynes King and his dual threat ability.
Yeah, I mean, what jumps off the film is what you said very, very quickly, is the fact that this man, he's got legs better than what I would have assumed he had legs. You know,
yeah.
You kind of knew he was a runner, but man, he scrambles like the best of them, you know, and throwing is not bad. He's not terrible at it. I mean, he completed 61% of his passes, but like, the fact of the matter is he's such a dynamic person when he's on the run. When he moves, he's got fast feet. He's got a twitch about him. I mean, I'm not saying he's Jordan Travin-esque, but he's definitely Jordan Travis adjacent. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
He kind of gives you that vibe of like, man, you have to have all eyes on him at all times on that defense. So if you're playing man coverage, you got to be covering your man, and you got to have another eye in the back of your head to make sure he's not taking off, because he has happy feet a lot of the times, which gets him in trouble, which is why he probably had, you know, 16 interceptions along with the pressure he faced. He just has happy feet. He's got he's in a lot of ways, Jesse, he's kind of a one read quarterback. Very few times did I see when watching the film that he went to his second or third read, you know, unless unless the play was designed for him to actually get to that read. It was either he was looking at his first read or he was moving somewhere and then trying to take off to find that same read or whatever was open in front of him. So it's going to be really important for Florida State to try to get him off his launch. You know, they talk about the quarterback when they're throwing at their launch area, because he gets really inaccurate when he's throwing on the run as well, too. This is a no joke quarterback. We're not playing like, you know, your Pop Warner quarterback. This is a legit D1 quarterback, had a lot of experience at Texas A&M. You know, obviously it didn't work out there, transferred to Georgia Tech. And Chris Winkie, who is a quarterback guru himself, has this guy playing at his best right now.
Yeah. And I mean, again, you look at last year was his first year in the system, kind of really first year as a full-time starter. So I think he's going to get better this year. But I think there are some weaknesses that you can attack. Like you said, if you can get him off his spot and also keep him contained, because that's a big part of it. You want to get him off his spot, but you don't want to let him get loose.
Right.
You know, when we went back and we were kind of both watching the same film with that 2022 or 2023 Georgia game, there's a few times where like he almost overhand tosses it because he's just off balance and he's just trying to make a play. And so those are where you can see the mistakes happen that you can take advantage of. So I think pressure will be big in this game. And now I will say, when I did look at some of his pressured stats, when you don't blitz him, he's a good passer, but that's where he had his most interceptions. It was like 11 interceptions when he wasn't blitzed. So sometimes when you sit back in coverage and you make him read, like you said, if you make him go through multiple reads and then you can kind of get some pressure back there, you can make him make mistakes. And I think that's going to be a big component of this. So, but again, man, I mean, this is going to be one of the best quarterbacks you're going to see all season. I mean, he's no joke. I know it's Georgia Tech on the jersey, but like he's a legit dual threat guy.
Exactly. And when we talk about pressure, we're not always talking about blitzing. Pressure doesn't always have to come by sending more than five to the line or more than four. You know, pressure can come because your defensive linemen are winning their individual battles to make him get off his spot, And then if you have him contained, and then on the back end, which is the defensive backs and linebackers, you got them in coverage and they got those receivers and running backs locked down, he's prone to try to force a ball. He has one of the things I saw was he has a gunslinger mentality when he's trying to pass. Like he's got that Brett Favre thing of, I can fit this ball anywhere. And there are a few times that, yes, he drops a dime, but there's more times than not that he doesn't, and he's throwing it into coverage or he's throwing a terrible pass over the receiver. And that's, I mean, again, 16 interceptions, that goes to show you that like the teams have figured out how to really keep him contained in the box, but create pressure for him. And then on the back end, cover up so much that he's basically out of options.
Yeah, and then when you look at some of those deep passing attempts from him, he actually is tied for 12th with the most percentage of deep passing attempts, because they will air it out. But then, like you said, getting it down there and completing it are two different things, because his completion percentage is only 31.4% on deep passes of over 20 yards, which is 53rd in the country. His turnover-worthy play rate, which is where a ball, you know, could get intercepted or something like that, was 10th highest in the country. So, I mean, when on those deep passes, and they do take shots, that there are opportunities to get picks there. I mean, again, I'm not saying like, we're not saying this guy's Brett Favre.
No.
He just has Brett Favre tendencies.
Correct. So,
I think that, again, this is a guy that you're going to have to respect his legs, and, you know, he can throw the ball, but he's definitely not a world beater. You know, I mean, you have a really good secondary, so you're going to make him work for it too.
That's right.
But you're going to need your linebackers to stay disciplined in this game and your edge players to stay on that contain. Cause man, if he gets loose, he can hurt you. So let's talk about the guys that he's going to be throwing to a little bit here as we run through our personnel. So he will get three of his top five targets back. Eric Singleton Jr. had a breakout season last year, led Georgia Tech in receptions and yards with 714, as well as touchdowns as a true freshman.
Yep.
You know, again, this is almost what we talked about in our offensive preview. Like, it's not illegal for a freshman to have a breakout season.
That's right.
Jaylen Brown, we're looking at you, bro. Let's go, looking at you. And then you also have Malik Rutherford come back, who caught 46 passes for 502 yards and four touchdowns. They also have former Bama transfer Christian Leary. He returns after putting up 309 yards. So, again, you have some good receivers here. One of them was a true freshman last year. They're going to have their work cut out for him against the secondary, of course. But, again, I mean, anytime you talk about a good quarterback, it definitely requires good receivers to make that work. And so you have some guys that are returning there that he is going to be in rhythm with early. So, you know, you're going to need your secondary to step up in this game. Now, when you look at the running back position, Jamal Haynes returns after leading the Jackets in rushing last season with over 1,000 yards, 6.1 yards per attempt, and 7 touchdowns. They did lose their number two back, who put up over 500 yards last year, but they do bring back Trey Cooley, who was their number three, 274 yards, 4.2 yards per carry last year, and 5 touchdowns. Up front on the offensive line, they do return 4 of 5 starters, including an all-ACC center and right tackle last season. So, I mean, again, that's why you see that rush offense right. that they had last year. I mean, they led the conference in rushing with 204 yards per game. That's something that we're hoping Florida State does this year,
right.
is hit that 200-yard mark. And on top of that, they only allowed 15 sacks. But obviously, you have to factor in the dual threat quarterback there, too.
That's right.
That obviously helps your sack numbers. They did have a pass block efficiency rated at 42nd in the country. So, again, man, it's not just Haynes King. I mean, he's right. good, but he's not the only one. They have experienced receivers. They have a 1,000-yard back, and they have 4 or 5 starters returning on offense. And that is why we say that this offense is dangerous. They're going to make you work for it. I think they are going to score some points. So, you know, give me some thoughts on the rest of the personnel that we just went over.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I want to go back real quick because this will all sum it up. I mean, Haynes King was fourth among Power 5 quarterbacks in rushing, fourth, with, you know, 737 yards and 10 touchdowns. Then you have Eric Singleton, who played as a true freshman and was second among all true freshman wide receivers in the country with his production last year of 714 yards and 6 touchdowns. Then, of course, as you mentioned, the other Chase Lane and Christian Leary as well. I mean, this offense with 4 of 5 returning offensive linemen, this is why, as you said, we don't want to take this lightly. Like, this offense is going to be able to score. They're going to be able to put up points. And we'll get to this a little bit later because you're going to recognize some of the things they're running. You're going to recognize some of the play calls. And we'll talk about this a little bit in a second. But this is what gives us just a little bit of concern of, like, the defense cannot just show up thinking they're just going to run all over and dominate this offense, because they're going to scheme in such a way that they're going to put the defense in precarious situations. They're going to put the defense in one-on-one situations that they're going to have to really try to defend and know and communicate well. Because if not, they will run the score up. I mean, we saw it against North Carolina. I mean, they scored 46 points or 42 points against North Carolina last year. And that's with a team that probably wasn't as talented or experienced as the team that they're bringing back this year. Now, again, North Carolina doesn't play defense, so that's, you know, that's either near or there. But this offense has been able to score and put up, you know, good enough points or enough points that you want to make sure that you've got everything batched down, locked up, and covered as far as how you're going to try to defend what they're going to run at you.
Yeah, man. And I was just looking it up real quick. I mean, they put up 205 rushing yards and 2 touchdowns on Georgia. Oof. I mean, that's doing something. And goodness gracious, they put up 348 yards on the ground against North Carolina and 305 yeesh. Against Virginia. That yeesh is right. So, man, that's why the defensive talk will be totally different. That'll be a different conversation. But again, this is why I said that I think this game is going to be harder than you think. Right. And that's why we wanted to go through personnel first. So now let's talk a little bit about how they use those personnel. And so I'll give you a couple of I didn't get to watch a ton of film, but I'll give you a couple of my takeaways. Then I'll kick it to you to kind of break down the scheme for us a little bit here. So when I watched about the first half of that Georgia Tech game, the first thing that stood out to me is, man, this offense is very active. They use a lot of motion, a lot of misdirection, a lot of read option to try and get your eyes going one way, and then they go the other way. They are primarily a shotgun offense. They don't run a lot of play action. I actually have that here for you. Play action was only at 24.2%, non-play action at 75.8%. Screens were 20.9%, which is actually a pretty high rate for screens here. And then the other thing that stood out is, by far, Haynes King is the engine that makes this offense run. Everything really revolves around him. He's not scared to call his own number. And you see that defenses have to respect his dual threat ability. And so because of that, you know, we were watching some film before the show, And, you know, hopefully we're going to incorporate that soon. We don't want a copyright strike, so we're going to figure that out first. We don't want to do game preview number one and get us in trouble. But, man, they have a couple of plays that, because they respect that quarterback run, I mean, there are some beautiful play calls. It was just a work of art where guys get open because the linebackers are focused in on that quarterback. So, man, a very active offense. Like I said, lots of motion and misdirection to kind of get you to kind of get your eyes going one way to get the defense off their stance. But yeah, I think it's going to be, again, man, this is going to be a tough test for us. So tell us what you saw on the scheme here.
Yeah. I was able to watch that Georgia Tech game as well. I was able to watch also the 2022 Georgia Tech game. And like you said, I think the biggest thing you need to understand is, like, they're going to throw a lot of eye candy at you. The play call splits is they run 55% of their play calls are rush or run designed run play calls, which was 30th in the nation, at least from last year. And about 45% of those play calls were in the passing game. Now, when you look at Haynes King, what's interesting about Haynes King is, like, they will take shots. Okay. They're going to take shots. But last year, 32% of his throws were between 1 to 10 yards. That's a lot of screens, a lot of bubble screens, a lot of read option or RPOs, which is run pass option, where they can fake it to the running back. He can run it. He can give it to the running back, or he can throw it like at a little bubble screen or a little slant. So you're going to see a lot of those as well, too. You're going to see a lot of, we say this a lot, counter. You're going to see a lot of counter. Remember, counter is a guard on the offensive line with a tackle or a guard with a tight end pulling right opposite where the handoff is, and the running back kind of following that as well. The reason why we're saying that is because as you watch this offense, if you've watched any amount of Florida State football for the last 4 years, you're going to see almost a mirror image of Florida State's offense being run by Georgia Tech. It is eerily, when I say eerily, I mean eerily similar. They're going to run a lot of counter at you, and then they're going to hit your wide screens, they're going to hit your bubbles, and then boom, they're going to go down deep. They want the explosive plays. They want that a lot. You're going to hear a lot of term called slot fade. This is a staple Mike Norvell man beating offensive play, meaning they see that the defense is playing man, which, by the way,
Florida State plays
a lot of man coverage, yep. Right? And so at Georgia Tech is going to try to beat FSU down the field with a slot fade, meaning that slot receiver. So imagine Ja'Kai Douglas or Jaylen Brown in the slot, and they're going to run like almost like they're running to the sidelines and then up, right? And then your wideouts are going to run like hitch routes and things like that, like, you know, 10 and in. They're going to try to hit that beat down the field because they think they might have an advantage of their wide receiver versus our DBs. Now, they might be wrong, but they're going to try that, right? And then the other thing that you're going to maybe recognize a lot is, imagine Biscuit. Remember how many times we saw Biscuit? Remember Biscuit? We love Biscuit. Remember how many times we saw Biscuit, or even last year, Kyle Morlock, kind of be like behind the line, coming out the block, and then boom, popping out for like a 10 to 15 yard pass. They love that. The TE pop, the tight end pop pass. They love that pass so much. We saw, Jesse and I, we watched that against Georgia where the linebacker got confused. That tight end was 15 yards down the field.
Yep.
Wide open. And so that's something Florida State's going to have to watch as well. They should watch it because they probably see that in practice all the time. The biggest thing, though, is Georgia Tech is going to try to provide a lot of window dressing, as Jesse said, a lot of window dressing for a simple counter play or for a simple zone play or a simple read or a simple screen. The thing that the defense is really going to have to do is keep their discipline, because if not, they're going to be looking somewhere and the play is going to be happening somewhere completely else. And they're going to try to make sure they're going to try to put FSU in situations where they're going to have to tackle in space, which was one of the, you know, concerns we went into the preseason with, of like, is this going to be a better tackling team? We had some issues with tackling last year. Well, Georgia Tech's going to put that to the test right at the beginning. They're going to try to get FSU in space to see if they can make tackles. And so that's a lot of what I saw from watching some of the film from last season. We'll see if they'll be able to try some of that this year against this Florida State defense.
Yeah, and the one thing that stood out that we talked about before the show was that because of how they run their offense, your defense has to stay disciplined. You know, correct, like you talked about, for just a simple read option, they'll send two guys in motion and then fake an end around, and then it's just Haynes King taking it up the middle.
That's right.
And so it's like you have to stay disciplined. You have to stay on your assignment. You have to keep that edge contained, or else you will allow them to get in space. And so it's going to be interesting, man. They're going to make you work for it. Again, I actually was very impressed when I watched their offensive film. I mean, just that's the scheme and everything, and the way they attacked Georgia. I mean, again, like I said, man, they are the very first – that first quarter or so, they were giving Georgia all they wanted.
They were.
Like, especially when you talk about like that slot fade, they had the one where the guy ran out of bounds and got the illegal touching call. But I mean, he was
wide open
in space and just got the penalty on that. But now, so we know the offense is going to be the dangerous part, but let's flip over to the defense. This is where things get a little juicy for us. You know what I'm saying? That's the side that we're a little bit more excited to talk about. Now, because of their struggles last year, they did make a change of defensive coordinator.
They
went out and got the DC. I'm going to try this, Michael. Tyler Santucci. I hope I said that right.
That sounds good.
I could be wrong. I'm just making it up. But that's what it looks like to me. But he did serve as the DC under Mike Elko at Duke last season. He was also the co-DC at Texas A&M in 2022. You know, again, man, Elko is a really, really good defensive mind. And now he may have been like the overlord of that defense,
the play caller.
I'm sure this guy still had his hands in it, and he is definitely probably going to be a step up from what they had before. Now, that's not hard to do, I will say that, because when you look at this defense, pass defense last year wasn't terrible, 216 yards per game average, 53rd in the country. And I think what's interesting about that number is, you know, when we were doing some projections recently with the offense, we actually projected, I was thinking Florida State's going to throw for around 215, 220. DJU's average is actually around 215 yards a game for the past 2 years. So if he can just hit his average, you know, that would be good there. Now, your run defense is just atrocious.
Yes.
221 yards per game on the ground allowed, 131st in the country. And this is music to my ears, Michael, because we're going to be a run-heavy team.
That's right.
I'm hoping that we're going to be able to really tear them up on the ground. And, you know, when I watched that Georgia game, I mean, their defensive line just had no push. It was like those guys were 10 yards into the open field before the secondary was usually making the tackles. Now, when you look at explosive plays allowed over 20 yards, they were 108th in the country. So, again, good for us. We just talked about Mike Norvell's offense is predicated on explosive plays. Third down defense, 43.5% conversions allowed, 108th in the country. Red zone defense, 85.5% scoring margin or scoring allowed, 92nd in the country. Really just didn't do a whole lot good. Phil Steele's pass defense rankings, they were 54th in the country. And here's what's interesting, man. He actually projects them to get worse this year. He has them giving up 33.8 points a game this year. So they did allow over 5 yards per carry on the ground. Now, Phil Steele did say that he thinks their new defense should be more geared towards stopping the run. They're going to have to do something because that was pretty bad last year. I will also say in the pressure department, they only produced 21 sacks last season.
Wow.
And they only bring back 5 of those.
Wow.
So it from the defensive line. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be a reset on defense for them. They're going to need that defense to do something spectacular to really have some success this season. And, you know, we talked about in our season prediction episode where what I thought was going to be the kind of key to this was like Georgia Tech has a good offense. Florida State has a really good defense.
Right.
Florida State has a good offense. Georgia Tech has a really bad defense. So I think if this turns into I don't know that it's going to be a shootout, but if it turns into like a race to 30, I feel like your offense should be able to get in sync against a defense that's been struggling. Now, we will go through I'll let you give some initial thoughts on the numbers that we just said, and then we'll go into personnel and a scheme like we did with the offense.
Well, you know, Jesse, I'll start here. You ever, like, be sitting down, right? You're eating a good steak. You get your toast, your bread, you know. You look over at the butter. It's so warm. And you take your knife, and you just go sloop right through it. No resistance. That was Georgia Tech's defense last season. It was a butter knife through warm butter. My goodness. I mean, everybody was running on him like they were running from the cops, man. It was crazy. It was wild. And of course, they replace, you know, like you said, they bring back, you know, a little production on the defensive line of that. They only bring back five of those sacks, like you said. And they get a new defensive coordinator. Now, that defensive coordinator, if you went back and watch, you know, if you go back and watch the FSU versus Duke game, you'll see a lot of that. And we'll get into the scheme in just a second, but you'll see a lot of that kind of translate over to what Georgia Tech will try to do. You just wonder if they even have the manpower on defense, yeah, the actual players to actually run that scheme well, to actually make a significant difference against Florida State. With that, they did bring in a lot of transfers, so they're hoping that those transfers will translate into more success with that. But at this point in time, again, the transfer portal has been a savior to a lot of programs to be able to flip their either offense or defense or entire team in one season. But did they get the kind of transfers that could make that much of a difference against FSU? That's the question that has yet to be answered.
Yeah, and I think that's what it's going to be like. I don't doubt the new DC probably has a good scheme coming from an Elko type system, but do you have the personnel? And again, we just talked about they lost half of their production last year anyway.
Yeah.
Now, I'm just looking at some of their game logs, man. I know they only threw for 95 yards, South Carolina State did, but South Carolina State ran for 196 yards against that defense last year. They gave up over 300 yards against Boston College. They gave up almost 300 against Ole Miss. I mean, they just really didn't stop anybody on the ground. Yeah. It's actually pretty crazy to see what they've done on that run game. And I'm hoping, man, like with our running backs, with our offensive line, and with DJU in the run game,
yeah,
I don't think you're going to have to throw the ball a lot. I think you're going to do enough to make them respect the pass. But, man, I think that's going to be the key, is just running all over this defense.
Exactly. And I'll say this. Like you said, I think you said they were 53rd in the country in pass defense. They gave up 12.47 yards per pass completion. But the thing about this is, though, they had 14 interceptions, which was tied for 19th in the country last season. So they intercepted the ball on 3.8% of passes thrown against them. So while they were sliced butter on their run defense, they were about average on their pass defense. So that's kind of where they hung their hat at last year, was they thought, well, if we give up the run game, then we can at least slow the game down, because, you know, the running game does slow the game down, and they believed that their offense could keep up, which you saw the scores, the high scores that they had in there. Yeah. They were able to kind of stay in the game with their offense because I'm assuming they thought, well, let's just give up the run game, but let's at least be decent enough in our passing defense. So that is something that DJU is going to have to be careful about. If he makes an errant throw, they were, at least last year, very good at stepping in front, taking the ball away for interceptions.
Yeah, and I mean, the run game does slow the game down, but you have to slow the run game down at some point. And that's something they didn't do. You know, all those shootouts, maybe they were auditioning for the Big 12. Maybe they saw realignment coming and they said, we're going to work on those shootout games. So let's run through some of the defensive personnel and then we'll get into the scheme. So when you look up front on the defensive line, they do return two starters and they get a DN back from injury, but they do have some key pieces to replace, including their sack leader, Kyle Kennard, which was a guy that we actually were after there for a minute. We kicked the tires on him in the portal, defensive end. And then also defensive tackle Daquan Dowse, who started 10 games for them, is gone as well. So they got some big pieces to replace. But, you know, as you mentioned, they did add three Power 4 transfers to provide depth to this unit. When you look behind them at linebacker, they lose two starters, including their nickel. But they do bring back redshirt sophomore Kyle Efford, and he did lead the team in tackles last year. I noticed he stood out on film because he's like, man, I got to give him props, though. I mean, I know their defense was terrible, but he was like that old school style linebacker. Yep. He wears like the big neck roll and stuff like that. You know, I love
the one where we've been praying for. Yeah, those types of ones.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. he will be joined by a linebacker who I don't even know if I can say this name, Trenellis Tatum. But he started six games in 2023, so they do have a little bit of experience there. They did add two Power 4 transfers from Louisville and Georgia to provide depth after losing some of their backups. At DB, they did lose some, you know, you talked about that pass defense being pretty good. They did lose first team all ACC safety Jalen King. along with cornerbacks Keenan Johnson and Miles Sims, who started 17 games combined. So they did lose some pieces off that back end, but they do have experience to build around with Clayton Powell-Lee and LaMiles Brooks, who both played over 650 snaps last season, returning for 2024. Mari Harvey also returns at corner after starting 5 games last year, and he will be joined by 6-year Tennessee transfer Warren Burrell. Rodney Shelley Jr. is also projected to step into that starting nickel role. And they also brought in a Rhode Island transfer who was a freshman All-American in 2023. So they did lose a lot, but they brought in some help. And then you got a new scheme that you're going to be running as well this year, too. So when I watched some film on that scheme, and I'll kick it to you because I only got to watch a couple drives. And what we said, what was the smart thing to do was to go back and watch that Duke versus FSU game, because, again, it was Duke's defensive coordinator going against Florida State. And it looked kind of similar to us as well in there. You had a lot of 4-2-5 defense with a couple of 4-3 sets in there as well. Looked like that they had very soft coverage. You know what I mean? A lot of times they played off a lot, which does give guys space. And also that's probably why another reason why their run game was so bad, because they gave, you know, by the time, if you're playing 5-10 yards off, by the time that running back gets through the line of scrimmage, because we just talked about their defensive line just wasn't effective last year. I mean, you're 10 yards into the run before these guys even get to you. So tell me about this defensive scheme and what you saw on film.
Yeah, again, like you said, they run a 4-2-5. So they very similar to what Florida State is run. They don't blitz a lot. They don't really depend a lot on the blitz. But what they do depend a lot on is that front four making a difference. They try to, you know, a lot of defenses will run what they call, you know, either stunts or twists. And they run some of that. But more of it is they're trying to shoot the gap. They're trying to get early. They're trying to beat the offensive lineman to the gap before the offensive lineman can get to the gap so that they can then have penetration against the run game. They're very much a bend but don't break, meaning they, like you said, they would rather sit back in coverage and allow you to dink and dunk down the field, hoping that their defensive line can get some penetration into your offense to disrupt the run game. And last year, Florida State, at least against Duke and against that defensive set, Florida State was, you know, already struggling in the run game because obviously injury and just the line wasn't as cohesive in the running game last year. And so Duke had a lot of success with penetrating, shooting the gaps, causing a lot of dancing in the backfield, causing a lot of back or tackles for loss last year. And I imagine that they're going to try to do that again this year. So if you're watching the game, I would highly encourage you to go back and watch that Duke game to see how that defensive coordinator tried to attack Florida State. And again, this is a Mike Elko defense, and this defensive coordinator is a disciple of Mike Elko. So you're going to see a lot of that similarity to that as well. But the biggest thing is that they're going to try to sit back in coverage, and they're just going to try to make you win, make you drive the field. Their whole thing is no explosive plays. Now we know, because the offense is very similar to what Florida State runs, that they're prone to that, because we know that our offense has been able to get explosive plays against our defense, which is the similar defense that they're going to run there. So you know that Mike Norvell and them are going to have it schemed up. At least, you know, Mike Norvell loves to have that first 15 or so plays charted out. And so you'll be able to see very early on kind of what they're trying to do against that defense.
Yeah, it is funny. Like we talked about, these teams actually have a lot of similarities as far as you're talking about their scheme on both sides of the ball, really. And, you know, I know they want to limit explosive plays, but, you know, 108th in this country last year wasn't too great. But, you know, I think now that we've talked about offense and defense, I think really like what I'm looking for, we can kind of get into like some keys to the game and things like that. You know, I think when you look at this, you're going to want to establish that run. And, you know, I think that's when we get into this section, it'll be, so how does Florida State win this game? And I think, to me, you have to establish that run. You have to, I mean, I highly doubt they've taken this run defense from 131st to anywhere probably top 50 in 1 year. I just don't think they're going to have the personnel to do that. So even if they've gotten better, you should be able to move the ball on the ground here. And I think that's what you're going to want your key to be, is establishing that run with your offensive line, with DJU at quarterback, running the ball some too, with that stable of running backs, getting guys in space, and, you know, taking advantage of that soft coverage. And then when they do finally pull up to maybe stop the run, hit them over the top of those explosive plays. And that's right. We talked about at wide receiver. I think that, to me, is my biggest key to the game, is establishing the run on offense. And then, of course, I think it's a pretty obvious suggestion here when you talk about a defensive key here is going to be to contain Haynes King. I think he's going to run the ball. We know he calls his own number a lot, whether it be from scramble or design runs. I think you're going to want to make him beat you through the air. I think that's going to be the key there, because we've seen, again, where 16 interceptions through the air, only 4 fumbles on the ground. He makes more mistakes when he throws the ball. So if you can force him into passing situations and possibly get some pressure without bringing the blitz and sitting back in coverage and make him make those mistakes, I think you have a really good chance of winning this game. I'm going to be honest with you, man. I think they're going to score some points. It's the first game of the season. We got some new pieces we got to get, you know, worked in. They have a lot of returning experience on that offensive side of the ball. I think they're going to score.
Yeah.
But I think once teams settle in, and, you know, Adam Fuller has a little bit of that bend, don't break too, so they're probably going to move the ball some. And you know, mobile quarterbacks, they hurt everybody, but we seem to really struggle with those guys.
Right.
So I think that's going to be a big key to the game, man, is just establishing that run on offense, letting it – let the game come to you. Let it open up those deep passes and then hit those over top with DJ. Don't try to do too much. Just pound the rock, keep the chains moving, and then on defense it's going to be – man, you got to make Haynes King one-dimensional and try to beat you through the air.
Yeah, absolutely. I think for me, for FSU to win this game, run the dadgum ball. Run it until they prove that they can stop it. I mean, run that sucker. I don't care how you run it.
Triple option on them.
Triple option on them. Quadruple option, sextuple option. I don't really care. Run that ball. You got Roydell Williams. You got Lawrence Torfili. You got Cam Davis. You got Sam Singleton. You got Keziah Holmes. You got Jalen Lucas. I feel like I'm preaching right now.
Yeah.
Run the ball. And then you'll hit them over the top with the explosive plays.
Yeah.
But, man, run the ball. Playmakers have got to make plays. This offense is built for playmakers. Mike Norvell has you on the field. Make the play that's in front of you, as our old coach used to say, right? Playmakers make your play. And then here's the thing. You're in Ireland. This is a big one. You're in Ireland. You're jacked. It's the first game. Harness the energy. Take that energy. Don't get outside of yourself. Don't play beyond the scheme. Don't play beyond. Don't try to make a play that isn't your play to make. Make the play that's right in front of you. Harness the energy. Run the ball.
Yep. Yeah. And man, I think when you look at the depth that you have at offensive line, all the backs that you have, and DJ, you being a running back too, like you said, run it until they stop it. I mean, you have enough bodies to stay fresh on the ground game.
That's right.
And so if you end up running, you know, if you throw for 150 yards, but you run for 300 and you win, it doesn't matter. Just run the ball until they make you stop it. And, you know, I think they will hit some big shots over top as well. But yeah, I think the key is going to be running the game. Now, how does Georgia Tech win this game? I think we always kind of like to look at the opposite side of the coin here. And I think one is going to have to be on offense. Haynes King's going to have to just run wild. I think he's going to have to get loose. This is how we saw Boston College sneak up on us last year. Again, we know there were some, you know, extenuating circumstances with the flu and stuff in that game, but it was the legs that hurt us. And so I think it's going to have to be Haynes King having a big day on the ground as much as it is the air. And then I think you also, you know, if they can do anything against the run and they have a chance, I don't think their defense is going to be good enough to stop this offense. I just don't. But if they can hold Florida State under like 30 points, I think, and their offense has a big enough day, they have a chance.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that's going to be a tall task to ask for them to stop this run game. So I think they're going to have to probably pick their poison here. Do you try and just completely go shut down the pass, or do you try and bulk up against the run a little bit? But, you know, I think their day is going to live and die with Haynes King. I think Florida State has a lot of different other options, how the defense does, how the running game does, how DJU does. I think their starts and stops with how Haynes King's day goes.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree with you. I think for Georgia Tech to win, this is going to sound crazy, but they got to hold Florida State under 20 points. If Florida State gets to 30, I don't see Georgia winning that. But if they can hold Florida State under 20 points, I think that makes it I think you're in the fourth quarter with that. I think it's a, you know, maybe a 17-14 game, 17-17 game, 21-17 game. I think that's where you're like, now you're really got the momentum, because no one expects you to be in the game at the fourth quarter. So if you got Florida State under 20, you're in the game. You cannot give up explosive plays, because you know this offense. This is the Mike Norvell offense that your offense is running. And so you know there's going to be shots down the field. You know, all season long, every media outlet has been talking, that covers Florida State, has been talking about the explosive arm, the deep ball of DJU, the speed of these wide receivers. So you know they're going to want to try to take explosive shots. So you're going to try to limit that. You're also going to try to create some turnovers on defense, that you're going to try to create some havoc. You might not be able to slow down the passing game. You might not be able to slow down the running game, but you want to make DJU uncomfortable. You want to create some throwing turnovers. And then the last thing, again, like you said, you've already said it, I'm going to say it again for them: run the ball. Florida State was 70th in the country last year against the run last year. It was the one area where they really kind of struggled and was stopping the run game. So if I'm Georgia Tech, I'm going to try to run the ball. Yes, most definitely with Haynes King. I'm going to have designed runs for him. You know, Georgia Tech, I didn't mention this earlier, but Georgia Tech likes to run a lot of jet, which is, you know, that wide receiver running from, you know, east to west, and that little pop pass they do behind the line of scrimmage. They love to run that jet, and that gets the defense moving. So if you can run that jet a couple of times and get FSU defense eyes look into that, and then you just, you know, option that out, man, Haynes King could be running for all day. So that's how Georgia Tech wins: no explosive plays, creating turnovers, running the ball, using that experience O-line, and trying to hold Florida State under 20 points.
Yeah, and I think the turnovers is a big key too for Florida State. I think you don't want to give that offense any extra at bats.
I think
that's going to be a really big part of this game, as well as, you know, again, you got a quarterback who had a little bit of a interception problem last year, and you have a really good secondary. So if you can force him to beat you with his arm, like I talked about earlier, and you can turn that into a couple extra possessions here, it's almost as equally important to take the ball out of their hands as it is to get it in your hands. So I think that could be a key too as well. So with that being said, Michael, let's get into some picks here. This is the fun part. So first off, I will just say that the numbers are kind of arbitrary. We're going to throw a number on it too, you know, as far as the score prediction goes. But I think what matters the most is who we think is going to win. And, of course, I'm going to pick Florida State to win this game. Now, again, I think this game can be tougher than people think. You know what I mean? We've talked about it. I think this is a harder game than people expect. With that offense, you're going to have to score some points to win this game. I don't think this is going to be like a 13. It's not going to be like the ACC championship last year, 16-6. I think you're going to have a higher score game, but I do think Florida State gets it done against the Yellow Jackets. I think, you know, against that bad defense, I think the offense will get in rhythm. I think, like you said, man, we're going to run all over them. So I have Florida State exterminate. Let me see if I can get her on camera here. Got my extermination spray here.
I love it.
I have us. It's funny. This is maybe a good omen. I have this because I had to exterminate a yellow jacket nest in front of my house last week. So good omen. Went ahead and stomped that out for you guys. But I have Florida State dumping a can of Raid on the Yellow Jackets here. Give me Florida State. Let's go 38-27. How about that? It doesn't quite cover the spread, but it gets you the win by double digits. And I think Florida State starts the season 1-0.
Awesome. Awesome. I love it. Listen, this is the first game of the season. We're in Ireland. The Irish people are going to see real football for the first time in their life. We're going to come out. They're going to be like, what are these people dressed in war paint and yelling this sound all over again? We're going to teach them the war chant. You probably will drink beer with them, and then we're going to go out and we're going to stomp some Yellow Jackets. I got Florida State winning 31-17, starting the season off with a big win, and we're drinking Guinness all over the place.
I love it, man. And that's, like I said, man, that's all that really matters, just getting that game one win. You know, and this is why I said it's so important, man. Like, if we come out and it's like 42-10 or something like that, I'm booking my tickets to the national championship. It is what
it is. That's right.
But again, I think it's going to be a little bit closer than that. I have respect for that Georgia Tech team, but man, we both have Florida State winning this one, and both by double digits. So I'm giving them a few more points than you are, but you know, I think it's going to be, I just think you got some game one mistakes that could happen.
You could even see
a defensive touchdown in this game. We'll have to see. Maybe, watch out for this, maybe even a special teams touchdown. Jalen Lucas,
Looking at you, bro.
I'm looking at you. Looking at you. So, man, really excited for this one. Like I said, we are only a few days away from kicking off the season. This was the game one preview against Georgia Tech. Man, I just can't wait to get to this one. I can't wait to watch Florida State football on Saturdays again. I'm excited. It's a new team with a lot of new pieces.
Let's go.
I can't wait to finally see what it looks like. I think we're going to learn a lot about what the 2024 season is going to look like after this game. We're going to know a lot after this one. But, man, I think if you get off to a strong start here, you really set the pace for the rest of the season. And then, you know, you get a little bit of a long layover into Boston College and then a bye week before Memphis. So, man, it's going to be a little bit of a disjointed start to the season with going over to Ireland and whatnot, but I think we're going to have an international whooping.
Let's go.
So I will take it. But yeah, man, really excited for this game. Excited to bring you guys some coverage. We will have a live post-game show on Saturday, just a few minutes after the game wraps up. So make sure you tune in for that. Make sure you hit the notification button so you don't miss that. Hopefully we're maybe I'm having a Guinness and we're celebrating a little bit here. You know what I mean? And I'm not chugging this can of wasp spray or anything like that. But I'll let you share some closing thoughts, man, and then we'll wrap this thing up and get out of here.
Yeah, man, I'm excited. Listen, I hope at the end you're able to share Guinness and I'm able to take a big swig of a Coca-Cola and relief that we won, that we did it, that we got through this season opener. That's always the hardest part of the season, is like just getting through that opener. And last year, you know, at least for the last 2 years, we've been able to really just kind of, you know, celebrate the beginning of the season because we've had opening day wins last 2 years ago against Duquesne. And then, of course, the LSU game. And then last year against LSU right here in Orlando. So let's celebrate. Come on, Knowles. You got this. This is your game. I believe if you show up and you play discipline, you play, you take everything that you've done all season and put it in to right now and focus on that, you will walk out of Ireland with a dub and Knoll Nation will celebrate all the way home.
Oh yeah, man. And for those of you in Ireland, enjoy the trip. Have a good time. You know, tag us in some photos. I would love to see it. Like I said, I'm only mildly jealous that I'm not there. I think it's going to be an awesome experience. But again, guys, we're going to have more shows coming at you this week as game day approaches, because we know, you know, you guys don't want to watch game day.
That's right.
Not with the way they talk about us. So we're going to have some stuff for you on Saturday morning to watch as well. Another episode there. But again, like I said, be on the lookout for that post-game show. And man, just excited for this Saturday, man. It's back. We made it.
That's right. We made it.
We survived another offseason. So appreciate you guys tuning in. Make sure you check out Alumni Hall FSU to load up on some FSU gear before we make our return to Doak. And again, like I always say, guys, drop a like and subscribe if you enjoyed this content so you don't miss a thing. And we'll catch you guys on the next one. As always, go Knowles.
Let's go, baby. Let's go.